Hi, good evening. This is Nora Petrich, and I am the lucky engineer of Nature Now, which is an original KPTZ production and has been on the air as long as KPTZ has. Our hosts, Nan Evans, Deborah Kelso, and Mary Robison, are amazing hosts that bring a vast array of scientists, naturalists, authors, enthusiasts to Nature Now every week. Tonight is going to be a showcase of my favorite clips from this recent season. So I thought we would start the evening with some mystery sounds. These are always some fun teasers that the hosts always do in our Nature Now show, but they leave the drama to the end. And tonight, I'm just going to tell you right out what you're listening to. Maybe just I'll give you a moment of a tease. So here we go. Here's a few. If you're just tuning in, I want you to know you are listening to Nature Now, and we are listening to... Don't go away. Please don't give up. It's coming. Okay, do we have any guesses? Well, this was first aired in November of last year and was given to us by Dr. Christopher Kelly. She's an oceanographer and a deep sea ecologist. And these are sounds from the deep, deep sea, the very deep sea. And this was not electronically mixed. This is what happens when they put the microphone way down there in the deep sea. Isn't that beautiful? Maybe I'll try to play it again a little later. This will be more familiar to you. Yeah, those are some whale calls that were given to us by Dr. Fred Sharp. And I think right now it would be a great time to give a pitch to our technical team that has archived every single show that Nature Now has been archived nicely by our Pat Rogers. I want to give a big shout out to Pat for all of the work she does behind the scenes and our other technical crew, Bill Putney, Rick Thomas, Mike Carroll, those are my heroes. Here's to you guys. Cicadas are cheering you on, guys. Thank you so much. All right, and we'll do a couple more. Another mystery sound. Let's see who can guess what this is. Well, those were some bullfrogs, and here's some of their pals. These are chorus frogs, also known as tree frogs. They're very prevalent in our part of the world. I just love these in the summertime. And here's one of my favorites, and it might fool you. So, that was a loon. When I first heard that, I I was a little mistaken. I thought, are those wolves shouting? But no, those are actually loons up giving their calls. Well, now we are going to play some snips from some of our old shows. And I want to start with a conversation Mary was having with Gary Bullock about a Save the Swans project that took place in Squim recently.
Yeah, it was called Project Swan Safe, and it's been noted over the past couple of years that swans were roosting at night on Kerner Pond off of Woodcock, and it's only about the length of a football field, and the prevailing winds are out of the west, so the swans are taking off in the morning to the west, but they were taking off through power lines that were 30 feet above the pond along the road. And we looked at all kinds of ways to take care of it. They put the diverter reflectors on the wires. It didn't work. There were still 8 or more electrocutions and deaths from swans over the past couple of years. So they started a GoFundMe site. And it last spring, I think in March, and within a month or two, they raised their goal of $65,000. And this summer, the PUD and Fish and Wildlife and Audubon all got together, and the utility companies, and they took down the power lines. They had to get easements through the neighbor's property. So we're thankful that they were agreeable to that. And they buried the communications wires and also the power lines and took down the poles. So there's no goalposts in the way for the swans to fly into and get electrocuted anymore.
That is an amazing, I would say, community project with a lot of different partners doing something that really helps. So hooray for the Safe Swan. Plus that also, I think, is a tribute to how much we appreciate trumpeter swans in the wintertime. I think they're sort of an iconic feeling of, hey, it's winter, the trumpeter swans are back.
We have more swans winter in the Squim Valley each year than the total population of swans in the U.S. when they were at their low point, almost extinct. We have 150 to 250 swans every winter who spend the winter here in our fields and in our ponds and in the bays.
It is a wonderful aspect of birding in the wintertime. Supporting KPTZ makes it possible for you to hear some really astonishing programming. Don't forget to support us and keep us going. One of the things that means a lot to me and others is Nature Now. Nature Now creates surprises with every show. You may head up a new trail, walk along the water's edge, or follow animal tracks, places you can't get on your own. Producing these radio adventures gives each of us fresh pleasure. We bring you experts who help us greet the natural world around us. So without KPTZ, there would be no Nature Now. Imagine the misery of losing us. This is brought to you happily by our volunteers, Nan Evans, Debron Kelso, Mary Robson, and Nora Petridge.
Okay, that was Mary Robson speaking to us. And the reason we are here tonight doing this special is because it is KPTZ's semi-annual fund drive. So please donate. We all need your support to keep this wonderful show like Nature Now going. And now Debron has a few words for us.
Hello, this is Debron Kelso, one of your Nature Now program hosts. And I have been with Nature Now and with KPTZ from the very beginning. I've been a field biologist for most of my working life, so being a radio host was not really a role that I was initially comfortable with. And I continue to do the show because I continue to learn amazing things about the natural world around us. And what could be better than to share those things with my friends and neighbors? One of my favorite things this past year has been the inclusion of more field recordings. Here is one of my favorite recent recordings with wildlife tracking expert Jill Cooper on Breeding Wildlife Sign.
Yeah, Yeah, sure. So we saw this beautiful set of otter tracks doing what otters usually do, their preferred gait, which is a lope. And lopes and gallops are usually grouped together, as are walks and trots. And the reason for that is that lopes and gallops have four footprints as a group, and then a big space, and then another four as a group, and then a space, and a group, and a space. And some people say it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, pause, 1, 2, 3, 4, pause. Whereas the walks and trots are more consistent. There's just even spaces between all of the footprints. So it's more of a 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. And so that's how you can tell the main difference. And then if you want to go even deeper into lopes versus gallops, the difference that most people use to differentiate those is that a gallop is so fast that the animal is actually in the air twice as they push off and jump and then push off again with their hind feet and jump. And so the hinds completely pass the fronts, and the group of four will actually appear on the ground as two hind feet in front of the two front feet, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Well, and you can also tell the size of the animal, right, by measuring between the groups of tracks.
That works best with walks and trots because the animal isn't leaping through the air, and so you can take a group of four tracks, and then you know that you have all 4 feet on the ground. And there's only so far that an animal can stretch out a leg in front or behind it. And so you have a general idea of what the length of the animal is if you kind of try to air sculpt it or imagine how big it would be with that foot size and that length between those four tracks.
And that was Debron and Jill, I believe. Jill, I'm sorry if I forgot that. On a tracking expedition down underneath the new causeway on the south side of Maristone Island. And as they went along, Debron asked a very good question, and I thought it was fun, so we're going to play this track.
And the other thing that we were curious about, I mean, what people often ask is, like, what is the difference between a cat and a dog track?
So with dog tracks and cat tracks, they both have 4 toes that register in their tracks, and they both have claws. However, the cats, as you probably are familiar with from your house cat, just like house cats, wild cats have retractable claws, and they don't like to keep their claws out while they're walking around, and so you usually don't see their claws register in their tracks unless they're slipping or trying to use them for grip in some way. And so that's the main thing that you can look for, is whether claws are present or not. So some of the other things you can look for are the overall shape of the track. And with dogs, it's more of an oval or an egg shape. And then if you look at a cat track, it's more of a circle. So their toes are kind of more splayed out to the side, making the overall track a circle instead of an oval. And the other big difference is the heel pad shape. So if you get a really clear track and you can see that heel pad, in dogs, it's a nice little triangle. And in cats, it has a lot more going on. There's 2 lumps on the top of the palm pad and 3 lumps on the bottom. And so I like to think of it as a bubble M shape. So if you look for all of those clues and piece them together, usually you can figure out if it's a cat or a dog track. And then always look at context. I like to try to remember to zoom out and not get so into the one single track you're looking at, but think about what habitat are you in and why would that animal be there? What's the likelihood that it would be there? And just take in all the clues you can possibly find.
We've been listening to some of my favorite clips from our Nature Now shows recently played. Well, now we're going to have a little conversation, or I'm not, but Nan Evans is going to have a conversation with Kelly Brenner, who is an urban naturalist. She wrote the book Nature Obscura, and they are going to talk about tardigrades. You got to learn about tardigrades.
to ask you to share the story of one of the most amazing critters, I think, in your book. And those are the tardigrades, sometimes called water bears, which is a name I personally love. Water pickless, not so much. And your hunt for tardigrades, just in common moss. I remember being introduced to tardigrades way back in college. They were preserved on a slide, on a microscope. And I thought, oh, this is kind of a cool critter. And yeah, there's nothing like it. And it never occurred to me that you could actually go out around your house, gather a sample, and see tardigrades. So tell me about these critters.
They're now famous because they have been shot out into space, exposed to the space vacuum and radiation. And not only did they survive that, but while in space, they laid eggs. The eggs hatched. They came back to Earth, and they all thrived to continue living. And that is because the tardigrades have a really nifty trick called cryptobiosis. And they achieve this by...
Slow down. Cryptobiosis. Okay.
Cryptobiosis. It's kind of like a sci-fi movie when they put somebody in a state of suspended animation, and they can live for 100 years. This is realistic. Not quite 100 years, but... The tardigrades, when their source of life is water, and when it starts to evaporate or dry out, the tardigrades, they turn into something called a tun, T-U-N. And basically, all they have eight little stubby arms, and they start to pull into their body, and their head shrinks in, and they turn into this little barrel-shaped thing. And it is desiccated, and it is essentially dead, except it's not. It's still living, but there's no detectable... metabolism. You can't even tell it's alive. And in that state, they can survive almost anything. You can put them in space, you can stick them in boiling water, you can put them in an iceberg. And when they are put back into their regular habitat of water, then they will pop their little legs back out and start living again. They're indestructible.
Yeah. Are they related to anything else that we know about?
No, they're their own kind of family of tardigrada. They're very similar to rotifers, which is another mossy animal that you can find. But they're kind of their own little world.
So, and tardigrade means slow walker. Is that right?
Right. And yeah, and if you see them in videos and whatnot, they're just like on a slide, and they look really goofy, plodding along, like they're walking in space almost, because there's nothing for them to grab onto. But in where they live in moss, they have these long curved claws on their feet. And they use those claws, and they move slowly around the moss. So they're pretty, I wouldn't say agile, because they're kind of goofy, big clumsy things. But they're not so clumsy as they look like in videos.
I'm going to encourage any listener to go on the internet and Google tardigrade. There are some amazing, amazing photographs. You go, does this thing really exist? Look at that. So tell me about... when you decide to go out and look at tardigrades, what do?
So you find moss. And surprisingly, the moss that I've had by far the most success with is the moss that grows on my roof. So I don't scrape the moss on my roof away. I don't put things up to kill it. And I just pick up the little clumps of moss. And then I put it in a dish, usually a petri dish or something, with rainwater, and I leave it to soak overnight because you want the moss to get, it's like a sponge, it soaks in all the moisture.
And rainwater, so it's the kind of water they're used to, and it's not...
Yes, and there's no chemicals, no other, but you could use regular water if you don't have any rainwater, that's fine too. And then the next day, you dump out the water, you hold the sponge, or hold the moss in your hand, and then you dump out the water, and then you take the moss and you squeeze it over the dish, just like squeezing out a sponge. And then you look at that water under the microscope. And you'll usually find, well, I do for the moss on my roof, not all the moss has tardigrades in it. And not all the seasons, because they're seasonal too. But you'll find tardigrades and rotifers and nematodes and sometimes springtails and mites and a whole host. And it's astonishing how many little animals live in this tiny, like a silver dollar size clump.
Mm-hmm. You know, your description makes me really want to get a dissecting microscope, which has been on my want list for quite a long time. To actually, you know, it's sort of exciting to, can we actually see these things that have this weird life cycle? So back to the Is it ton or tune? Ton. Back to them again. You say in your book that, and I think this is a quote or pretty close to a quote anyway, despite their survival abilities, a ton is still a ton. And although it is alive, it is not living. And that statement stopped me to sort of think about it for a while. And what I'd like to do is to ask listeners to think about something that is alive and not living. And then we'll come back to that in a little bit, because I'd like to hear you expound a little bit more on that thought. Anything more you want to share about tardigrades before we go on to another strange and bizarre life form?
Some people don't think so, but I think they're absolutely adorable. I mean, some people look at them and think, oh, that's kind of gross. But when you look at things, I'm weird. I like the weird things. But they've got these chubby little legs. They've got this little suction cup face. And I just think they're so much fun to watch.
Oh, I've got to get that insecting microscope. Yes. I want to watch these things. I actually thought they were kind of cool when they were prepared on a slide all those many years ago, long.
And that was Nan Evans and Kelly Brenner talking about tardigrades. You can't get enough of that. Here's something Nan has to say to us.
Hi, this is Nan Evans, and I'm one of the hosts of KPTZ's Nature Now. The special goal of this fall's fundraising effort is to grow and strengthen KPTZ's local news efforts. Did you know that Nature Now is part of KPTZ's news programming? How many local radio stations do that? KPTZ is indeed authentic, eclectic, and original. Please help KPTZ maintain and strengthen our service to this incredible community in which we live. This has been Nan Evans. Thanks for listening, and I really hope you, like me and my friends, donate to KPTZ.
And you know, sustaining donations are regular, recurring contributions that help KPTZ run smoothly. We know what's coming in, and that helps a lot. We have equipment costs, computer systems, and various other operations that require constant upkeep. We also are trying to grow our news department. So please go online, find that big blue button, and donate now. Thanks so much. We appreciate it. You may have thought we're giving birds a little short shrift today, but I have a really sweet little section here with Steve Grace telling us about groups of birds. Let's listen to what Steve has to say with Nan Evans.
You were chatting about the various collective nouns for groups of birds.
Yeah, so a lot of people know murder of crows, gaggle of geese. Those are kind of some of the more common ones. But how about ravens and unkindness of ravens or owls, a parliament?
Oh, I know the owls. Oh, parliament
sorry,
of owls.
Cool, huh? How about larks? An exultation of larks.
Up into the sky.
I think one
yes.
of my favorites is vultures because they have a couple different names depending on what they're doing. If they're rising up to the air on thermals, they're called a kettle of vultures. Yeah.
And it's called kettling when they
do
that.
Yeah, fun. I mean, we could do a whole podcast on the eagles, a congress or a convocation of eagles. How about hummingbirds? Cute little hummingbirds. If you've seen a group of hummingbirds, you've seen a charm of hummingbirds.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, fun, right? Nan, puffins have to have the best collective noun of all. So the puffin, like we talked about last week, it has some comic appeal. If you've seen a group of puffins, like we saw the other day on the cruise, you've seen a circus of puffins.
Yes, indeed. Well, I think we could have a whole show on naming birds and other creatures as well. And that is going to do it for tonight. Thank you so much for listening in. On behalf of the Nature Now crew, thank you so much for being there with me. I really appreciate it. And do support KPTZ. You know how to do it. One of the features of Nature Now is we always try to end with a song. And our hosts, Nan, Debron, and Mary, get great pleasure choosing their songs. And here's one of my all-time favorites. Forgive me for not having the credits.
plants are producers, they're sun users in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
They make food from the sun, and the food chain has begun in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
Rabbit comes along and eats the plants down in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
But the plants, they have more to feed that herbivore in the food chain.
Chain, chain. Predator and prey, producers and decay are in the food chain. Chain, chain. Predator and prey, producers and decay are in the food chain. Chain, chain.
Coyote likes to eat a little rabbit meat in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
And it makes his day to eat some rabbit prey in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
Coyote lifts his tail and skies on the trail in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
For the bugs, that's a deal. Scott's a gourmet meal in the food chain.
Chain, chain. Predator and prey, producers and decay are in the food chain. Chain, chain. Predator and prey, producers and decay are in the food chain. Chain, chain.
The scat will decompose and a new plant grows in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
So the food chain never ends. It just begins again in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
You can see from this song how energy moves along in the food chain.
Chain, chain.
So eat your food, my friend. Think of where it's been in the food chain.
Chain, chain. Predator and prey, producers and decay are in the food chain. Chain, chain. Predator and prey, producers and decay are in the food chain. Chain, chain. Predator and prey, producers and decay are in the food chain. Chain, chain.
Dungeness River Nature Center is pleased to support KPTZ programming like Nature Now. In memory of Dee and Beverly Swearingen, who taught their children and grandchildren the love and stewardship of nature, Dungeness River Nature Center, teaching generations about nature on the Olympic Peninsula at Railroad Bridge Park in Squim. More at DungenessRiverCenter.org.